Hello, my name is Lou Herndon. I'm chairman of the board of Tallycor Incorporated. And if you're one of the millions of people that have bought the Ungame over the years, I want to thank you personally. Today I've asked Rhea Zakich, the creator of the Ungame, to share her story about this fantastic game that was brought to our company through a garbage can. Actually, I won't go too deep into that. I'll let Rhea share that part of the story with you. In the meantime, I've asked Beverly McNeff to interview Rhea and draw this spectacular story out of her at this point. Thank you again.
My guest today is Rhea Zakich. Rhea's story is a triumph over tragedy. Indirectly, she has touched millions of lives and changed them for the better. Rhea is the creator of the Ungame, a game that has ushered in a new era of communication skills. Rhea, I just have to ask you, what prompted you to create a game?
You know, Beverly, I never set out to create a game. It's the last thing in my mind at that time in my life. But I was without a voice for months. I had throat surgery and couldn't talk, and here I was, a young mom with two sons, 9 and 10. Mm. I was totally frustrated without being able to speak. I had two surgeries, and the silence before and after was terrible, and the doctor said, prepare yourself for a lifetime of muteness.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't know what I was going to do. Mm. How do you go on from there? So my creating the Ungame was, for me, the only way I knew to relate to people. I had to figure out a way to stop people and get them to sit down and face me, because nobody looked at me when I did gestures, and I didn't know sign language. So I created the Ungame because it was out of necessity.
Gosh, so the questions that you came up with were really questions you wanted people to ask you?
Some of them
draw
were,
them out?
Yes, some were questions I wish people would ask me, and you know, they didn't. Mm-hmm. When people heard that I couldn't speak, most people assumed I couldn't hear.
Oh.
And so they quit talking to me. Mm-hmm. They just excluded me, and I walked around like I was invisible. And so I did write some questions that I wished people would ask me and not walk away while I was writing.
Mm-hmm.
That was the other problem. People didn't wait for me to write.
Mm.
But some of the other questions that I eventually put in the Ungame were questions that I now wanted to ask other people, things that I had never thought to be interested in before.
Mm.
I was going through such emotional pain with the loss of my voice. It was a grief unlike any I had experienced. And I began to wonder if other people had feelings like I was having right then.
Yeah, I'm sure if you were afraid of losing your voice, you were afraid of ever being useful, probably, to your family, and how would you raise children? I mean, that's got to be a tough thing if you can't tell them, don't do that, don't do that. You
know? I know, that was my biggest problem, because as a mom, I really thought that being a good mother was saying things like,
oh, yeah,
comb your hair,
mm-hmm,
brush your teeth,
mm-hmm,
tie your shoes, mm-hmm, wear a sweater, shut the door,
yeah,
feed the dog, take a shower. And I couldn't imagine being a mother and not being able to say those things.
So did your children then start to talk to you? Did you find that they would begin to talk?
Well, at first, I think they delighted in the fact that I wasn't nagging them all the time, and I wasn't calling them in from play, and I wasn't saying, did you do your homework? So I think the first month or so, they just experienced a freedom that they had never had, and that was to do what they wanted to do. They also learned that if they looked away from me, they could not see my gestures or my face, my expressions. After a while, when we sort of got used to this around the house, they did begin to share things with me that I don't think they would have shared otherwise.
Mm.
And I think it's because they finally figured out that I wouldn't give them advice, I wouldn't scold them, I wouldn't put them down,
mm-hmm,
I wouldn't say, now, why didn't you do this?
So you lost your voice, went through this tragedy, had your kids and, you know, all of this going on. But how did a game come out of all of that?
Well, I was looking for a purpose in my life.
Uh-huh.
At this time in my life when I lost my voice, I was very, very active in my community. I was a Laubach literacy teacher, which means I was teaching people to read and write that didn't know how. I was a PTA chairperson. I was a Cub Scout den mother. I was a Sunday school teacher. I was a choir member. And
well, no wonder you lost your voice.
I know. No wonder. Everything I did that had meaning to me was gone with the loss of my voice.
Mm-hmm.
I look back now and I wonder, why didn't I learn to tap dance or play the piano? I don't know. But my voice was so important to me. And after going through a deep depression over the loss of my voice, mm-hmm, I began to seek a purpose. And I got a clue as to what I wanted to do when I began to go out into the world as a mute, but now I was a listener. Mm-hmm. I was a spectator in everything rather than a participant. Mm-hmm. And I began to notice that even people with voices didn't do a whole lot better than I was doing as a mute.
That's true.
One person would speak and another person would shout back or say words back to that person, and I would have the sense that they didn't connect, that they didn't really get it. And I began to look for some a secret, I guess, because I had never read a book on psychology or communication. But with this realization that people with voices, which I thought was the greatest thing in the world to have a voice, were not really connecting and people didn't seem to be understanding each other, I remember staying up late one night and saying, actually in a prayer, God, you know, I need a purpose, and I think what I want it to be is to help people learn to use their voices to communicate more effectively than what I was hearing. Mm. I didn't know at the time that I would get my voice back. So that was my desire, to help people who had voices learn to communicate more effectively.
So here you were. You'd given a prayer, basically calling out to God, the universe, whatever you want to call it, saying, help me. Help me use this in a more useful way. And then the next day, the game?
Well, actually, the next night.
The next night, okay.
It's, you know how some people say they have to sort of hit the bottom, and I guess mm-hmm. getting to this place where I felt so helpless must have opened me in some ways that I had not been open, because after I had verbalized that in my mind, I couldn't speak it aloud, but that yearning and that sense of wanting to have a purpose, I wanted to matter, Beverly. Mm-hmm. I always wanted my life to make a difference, and that ever since I was a child, I didn't want to just take up space and breathe and eat, you know, and so that part of me that wanted to make a difference grabbed onto this. And after that prayer, I sat at my kitchen table doodling on a sketch pad, which I did a lot when I was a mute. I just drew pictures and wrote words and thoughts, and hoping that somebody would come and read them, but nobody came too close to my table. But that night, I began to draw what I thought of as the road of life. I drew a road around the edge of this huge sketch pad, and I began to think of my life, reflect on it, and I thought, you know, I had happy times, sad times, scary times, adventurous times, and I had never talked to anyone about those. I wanted everyone to think I was just so perfect. Mm. I never let anyone know I had feelings. I always wanted them to think I was very capable and competent, and inside, there was a lot going on, and so this night at the table, I was reflecting on my journey in life, began to wonder if other people were also on this same road, but just at different places. Mm-hmm. Here I was now in frightening time and depressed time, but other people seemed to be in happy time, and like they didn't even know I was going through this. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that when I was in happy time, I had not paid any attention to someone who was maybe depressed. And so as my mind was wandering that night, as I looked at this road going around the edge of a large pad, I began to write feelings that I had had during my life that I had never talked about, and wondered if other people had them. Hmm. Loneliness, fear, depression, anxiety attacks, a fear of death, for example. Wonder if anybody else ever felt rejected. Because when I couldn't speak, I would listen to my friends stand in a group and talk about going to lunch, and then I would hear someone say, well, no use inviting Rhea, she can't talk.
Oh my.
And I would hear that, like they thought I was deaf also, I guess. And I would go home feeling so rejected. And I had never heard anybody talk about those feelings. So I began to write all the feeling words, and then the thought came to me, what would I like to ask people now that I had never taken the time to ask? Mostly was about feelings. And so I grabbed some 3x5 cards and I started scribbling these questions. And after I got about 100, I thought, you know, I feel so left out, so lost, and everyone ignores me. What is it that I would tell them if they did ask me? And so that became the basis for the second deck of questions, which now are all shuffled together. But they were the questions that I wish people would ask me, because now I felt I would tell them that I'm not as capable and competent and you know, not as happy as I often act, and that I'm scared and I need help.
Wow, you know, you're talking about questions and the type of sharing that is commonplace almost now.
Yes.
But we're talking about, when was this, back in
was in the late 60s, okay. 68 and 69.
Late 60s, people weren't talking about this.
No.
People were like, okay, and all together, and now you're talking about deep feelings. Did you get anybody to play this game with you?
Well, eventually I did, but let me tell you that I had never heard people talk about feelings because I grew up in a family that shamed us if we cried.
Well, and certainly a lot of families still don't talk about feelings.
That's right. I do. So. I find that's true. Mm-hmm. But it did seem to be pretty much of a cultural thing in mm-hmm. my day of growing up, where people would say shame on you if mm-hmm. you did something wrong. And mm-hmm. if you cried, I was called sissy and baby. Yeah. I used to be told, you know, you go to your room and don't you come out till you have a smile on your face, which I never understood as a child. I mean, I was sad and crying, and I had to do it alone. Mm-hmm. And then often I would fake it and smile just because I wanted to come out of my room.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that meant as far as what to do with feelings of sadness or hurt or pain. If I was angry, I was scolded. In fact, I remember my mother would yell at me and scold me for being angry, and I'd think later, but she was angry. So yeah. I didn't know what to do with feelings. I didn't even have names for some of the feelings that mm-hmm. I was now experiencing. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea of being willing to risk letting someone know I had them was mm-hmm. quite frightening. Mm-hmm. But I felt as though I had lost everything when I lost my voice.
Sure.
I was sure my children were going to be delinquents. I was sure my marriage was going to break up. I was sure I'd never find another friend. And so what's to lose by letting people know I have feelings now? So yeah. I was really ready to risk. And as you know, around the early 70s, this became quite a trend. Mm-hmm. People began to get in touch with feelings and talk about them more. But I had never heard of it when I went through this experience.
So you have the game board, the idea of a game board, anyway, on your sketch pad. Mm-hmm. You're starting to write these questions now. Now you've
yes.
got these deep-seated questions. But did you answer them? Did you go to somebody and say?
Well, you know, they weren't all deep-seated at first. Some of my questions were like, you know, how was school today? Mm-hmm. I couldn't say to my 9 and 10-year-old boys, you know, how was your day? I couldn't say.
Did you flip a card at them then?
I stacked the deck a few times. But things like, you know, what do you want to do on the weekend? And why do you look sad? These were ordinary questions for a mom to want to ask her kids
sure.
that I couldn't ask, and questions that I wanted to ask my husband, like, have you ever felt lonely? Mm-hmm. And why do you walk away from me when I'm trying to tell you, or gesture? You know, innocent questions. They weren't deep. I mean, they had some feeling words in, like, have you ever felt lonely? I honestly thought they'd all say no if they got that card. I left this lying on the table all night long. I finally went to bed, and my boys got up the next morning and saw it on the table, and one of them said, what's this, Mom, a game? Now, I had not thought of it as a game.
Oh.
It was an outpouring of my anguish and my wonderings. It just happened to look like a game because there were a stack of question cards and a road.
So your son created the game.
I guess so. Do I have to give him royalties at this point? Let's not tell him. But one of them said, what's this, a game? And I said, I shook my head. Yes, because it was the first time they had talked to me in days.
Yeah.
So I was excited that they acknowledged it. When they went to school, I remember getting a pencil and making little lines across the road to mark off spaces because it didn't have any places to hop to.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ran and got the Monopoly parts.
Oh, my gosh.
And put them on the board. And so when they came home from school that day, it looked a little more like a game because now there were inch squares that they on that road.
Mm.
And we waited till Dad came home. We sat down after dinner, and I had no idea what would happen with this. I was just excited that they showed an interest.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I drew little pictures on the board, too. I wanted to make it look attractive so they would come and sit down. So I just drew little characters and animals, probably. And so it was colorful. We began to roll our dice and move the markers around and draw cards on certain spaces. And I couldn't believe what came out in 20 minutes.
Mm.
In fact, my husband said, after 20 minutes, I think I've learned more about the four of you or the three of you than I have in all the years we've lived together.
Oh my gosh.
Some of the questions that I had hoped someone would ask me, they were drawing off this stack because one of my sons shuffled the cards. I had stacked them neatly, thinking, okay, one son sits there, one sits there, my husband sits there. So I have to admit, I staged it a little bit, but that was all shot when they shuffled the cards. And my husband talked about loneliness. And one of my sons talked about what it felt like to be laughed at. See, I did get teased occasionally by people because people would say, well, did you ever think you'd see Rhea with her mouth shut? You know, and they all laugh, and I'm thinking, this is not funny now, you know. So I had wanted to let people know, I wanted my family to know, you know, I don't like it when people laugh about this. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't get the card. One of my sons did. And he talked about how it felt to be teased at school. And it was heart-wrenching, things he hadn't even told me. And so a magic began to happen that night. We began to listen to each other. And do you know, the fact that I could not speak, I believe, had something to do with their sharing as openly as they did. And that was a hard lesson for me later when I wondered, why is it that when I used to ask my boys a question, they would just sort of grunt and not even give more than a word answer? But in this situation, the very same question I might have asked a month before, they were now talking openly about, and I thought, uh-oh, it's because I'm not saying anything and they don't have to worry about my comebacks. Mm-hmm. So that was an incredible lesson.
And isn't that an aspect of your game, too?
Yes. I put that rule in there.
It's a great rule.
One of the first rules is that the players will agree not to talk unless it's their turn. Mm-hmm. You will hear totally different stories and answers if people feel that safety, I guess, that they won't be criticized or judged, or someone else isn't going to say, well, wait till I tell you what happened to me, you know.
We should all be playing the on game all the time, shouldn't
we? I know. I have to play it from time to time to remind myself of these wonderful lessons I learned. But do you know that my husband had not invited friends over for several months because, you know, when your wife is a mute and she's going through something, I didn't know what I had, throat cancer, didn't know if I was dying. So it wasn't a real happy home at that time. So we had not had any friends in. But once I created this tool, which was beginning to look like a game, my husband invited friends in. Mm-hmm. And this couple that was married for 30 years played the end game for 15 minutes. And the wife looked at the husband and said, No, he looked at her and said, you never told me that before, whatever she answered. And then she said, well, you never asked me. And a little bit later, he said again, when he heard her answer, you never told me that before. And she says, I have too told you that. You've never listened. And I thought, okay, I better move back away from the table now. But they asked if they could borrow it. Uh-huh. They had teenagers at home. Uh-huh. And they said they never take the time to listen to them. Plus, they realized they hadn't really listened to each other. So when they took home my ungame, I was thrilled. I didn't call it an ungame at that point, but when they took it home, I felt good because I was looking for a purpose in my life, and here they wanted something I had created. Mm-hmm. The only problem was that it left me without any way to communicate, so I stayed up all night the second night and made another one for myself.
Oh, my goodness.
It was the beginning of a journey.
Yeah.
Everyone who played it wanted to take it home. And I didn't have the heart to say no because I had those mixed feelings. You know, they like it. They like it. I began to get reports back from these families when they would return it because they thought they were borrowing it. They would tell me about amazing things they heard from their kids and from each other and how much closer they felt. And so I was beginning to think that this was bigger than I thought, you know. Mm-hmm. But I stumbled on the idea.
Well, now I know we're just to the point now where you think you've got a game. Mm-hmm. You've got something you've created. But you didn't call it an ungame yet, right?
Right.
What were you doing? Now you've got these things and people are borrowing them. So what came next? Did you mass produce it? Did you?
Well, when people started asking me for 5 copies for their class in their high school or 4 copies for a youth group in a church, I began to get a little overwhelmed. I mean, I was thrilled at first, but now I was getting orders up for like 20 and 30 games at a time.
Yeah.
They were taking me 8 hours to make.
What were you calling it then? Did you have a name for it?
Well, the term that was popular around 1970 was Tell It Like It Is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote that on the back of this little deck of cards, Tell It Like It Is, just meaning be honest, you know, lay it out there. So that was on the deck of cards. Hadn't really packaged it anyway except in a grocery sack when I would deliver one to somebody. But I began to make them by hand. And do you know that this was before copy machines? So I had to draw everyone with pencil and then marking pen and then color it with crayons.
Oh my.
The cards had to be typed one at a time. Carbon paper did not go through cardstock. And this, I didn't ever see a copy machine at that time. I had not worked outside the home. So I was cranking them out by hand and delivering them, and everyone I delivered resulted in more interest. Well, the reason it was called an ungame is that people were coming back to me saying, you know, we played with those Tell It Like It Is cards last night, but let me tell you, that is not a game. I kept hearing that. They'd say, it looks like a game, but it's not a game. Well, first I thought, well, maybe it's a non-game, but that seems strange. And then a little bit later, after I met the people who were willing to produce it for me, we came up with this word, the ungame, and we were so excited. And do you know that was before Uncola?
Oh, really?
I believe we started that.
So they should be paying you royalties. Should we tell Lou about that one?
So the ungame was born. But after I had orders for, I think, nearly 1,000, papers, little letters that people had written to me, I started writing to game companies. I thought, I've hit on something. I don't fully understand why it's working, but I had requests. And so I wrote to 26 game companies. I went to Toys R Us and read every name on the end of boxes and sent them handmade versions, which were worth their weight in gold to me because of the length of time they took to make them. Over about a year, I got 26 rejections, and I was just heartsick. I could not convince anyone in the business that this game would fly. And still,
well, it wasn't a game, right?
I guess so. And there was my mistake, writing to game companies. The reasons many of them gave was that it wasn't competitive. Do you know that there wasn't a non-competitive game on the market at that time? Mm-hmm. No one had heard of that. Yeah. Now they're common.
Yeah.
But people, the companies would write back and say, well, who would buy a game if they can't win? Said, it's not the American way. We're into competition. And another reason that it was rejected was that it dealt with feelings and values, and it was a little ahead of its time. Yeah. No other game was like that. Right. These people, producers of games, had never heard of people even wanting to talk about feelings or values. And so I was just heartsick, and I continued to try to make them myself. And then someone gave me the idea, why don't you try to mass produce them? Mm-hmm. Why didn't you go to a printer? And printers were not as prevalent as they are now either. Yeah. I had to go downtown, go to a place that printed magazines and newspapers, and I risked having 300 copies printed on paper. That's the way they printed them. Mm-hmm. Well, I owed that printer a lot of money, but I thought, well, I'll sell these now and pay them back. Then I had to go get cardboard because the paper kept rolling up. An 18-inch square piece of paper, it curls. Mm-hmm. So I went to a cardboard company and had to go out on a limb for more expense, get 300 18-inch square pieces of cardboard. And my friends were helping me a little too much here. Someone told me about some kind of glue, spray glue, and they said, you can do a lot of them at a time. Spray that paper, mount it on the cardboard. Well, I laid 30 cardboards in my house one night, sprayed them all, smoothed out these beautiful, now professionally printed game papers on them. The next morning, they were all curled like giant potato chips.
Oh my gosh.
The ink had bled through the paper. The cardboard was all buckled. It was the wrong kind. I didn't know about cardboard or paper. That was the final straw. I couldn't do this. I was not a business person. I didn't care how many orders I had. It was too hard. And I took all of those games, damaged games, and went out and stuffed them down into my trash barrel, which got pulled out to the curb the next morning. Little did I know, and this is probably part of the answer to that prayer that night, a little neighbor boy, unbeknownst to me, fished one out of my trash barrel, and he found painted rocks. That's what I was using for the markers by this time, and found a whole bunch of question cards, took all this home. It was from his mother and her friend that this game was produced. Two people who experienced this handmade game in their homes. The little boy had lost his father to death, and I didn't realize that he was very depressed over this and hardly talked. His mother worked long hours in a hospital as a nurse and a nursing instructor. So she was gone a lot during the day. And I didn't know until she told me the story that when she came home from work and there was this on the living room floor with her little boy, he began to open up and share as he turned these cards over. And she said, all the feelings that he had been holding in came out. And so she shared then with a partner of hers who had a totally different job than she did, but the two of them went together and created the Ungame Company.
Oh, isn't that
and
great?
Amazing that they came along when they did. So it was truly out of the garbage can that this game got out into the world. But I've been grateful to this day that they were willing to risk their all the time and energy and expense to produce something that all the professionals said at that time would never make it.
Right.
But we know that it has.
It's interesting. It seems like every time you've been at the bottom is when you've been lifted up, hasn't it?
I've noticed that.
Yes.
Like when I get to the end of my rope,
then just like the game in the trash can, and now...
And I say, help, and then ideas come. It's amazing to me. I really have learned so much from this, not just the game. I've learned hundreds and thousands of things from playing the end game, but I've also learned some things about the whole process I went through, and one is that when I sort of get to the end of myself and cry out to God, creativity comes. I get thoughts and ideas that are beyond my own. I guess as long as I think I can handle something, that blocks it.
You're not out of the way. Yeah.
I know, and I've noticed as I've played the game with people that when they share something from deep within themselves, whether it's their sadness, their anger, their pain, whatever, they even get in touch with creativity. Mm-hmm. And they can actually solve their own problems sometimes. Mm-hmm. While I just sit there and listen, I used to want to give them advice because I always felt my advice was good. But I find out when I'm playing the end game and I have to be quiet, they share something. And then the next turn, they're getting an idea as to how to deal with that. And it's amazing. But I do think creativity is down under some of the things that we keep bottled up in our hearts and
or
minds.
Or almost the things we think we can handle.
Yes, right? Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And then we realize we can't.
We realize we can't. Then
we get infused with that extra help. So a lot's happened. The Ungame's now in that process of being produced, and then it went into the next step of being even more mass-produced.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
And now it's where? How many different countries? How many different games have been sold?
I don't know that we could ever count the countries.
It's all over the world.
I get letters from
all over the world.
Yes.
Yeah. What's the most unusual country you've ever received?
Well, I guess I was surprised. Well, each time I got a letter from another country, I was surprised because I didn't know that families in other countries had communication problems. See, originally I thought ours was the only one, and then I found my neighbors and friends did too. Then the schools and the churches. And when I got the first letter from Africa, for example, I thought, my goodness, they have the same problem there. And then China. I think maybe a country that got my attention the most as a surprise was Greenland.
Oh.
I didn't even know there were people in Greenland, let alone that they were having the same kind of problems I was. But I have a newspaper clipping from a China newspaper showing women in a girls' school, or girls in a girls' school, who are there to learn English, and one of the tools that's used there is the Ungame. Hmm. Someone sent it to me from China.
Oh my gosh.
So I have no idea where the game has gone. It's just all over the world.
How many games have been sold?
I don't keep track anymore, but I remember when it passed 2.5 million.
Wow.
And I don't know that anybody's counting now. We have different versions of the Ungame now, it's a little harder to keep track of. And it's just been amazing what has happened.
But then other languages besides English.
Yes.
Is that right? So
over the years,
Spanish?
Probably 15 different languages.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that those are all still available, but from time to time, the company gets requests to translate it. And I believe we always say yes. I always say yes when they want to. And it's just amazing how much it has helped people. But the incredible letters I've gotten is what shocks me. You ask, who's playing it?
Yeah.
Families seem to write to me a lot, and I think it's because they know that it has a story behind it. But I get letters from professionals, too. Let me read some of the letters that I've gotten from families that just warm my heart. This one says, "Congratulations, your Ungame is an answered prayer to so many homes that need a little push to get people to talk to each other. Our friends introduced us to it, and we love it. We have only one regret, and that is we didn't find it until now."
Oh.
she went on to talk about she's a grandma. Mm-hmm. And she didn't know these things when her children mm-hmm. were young. Mm-hmm. I love this one. She said, "Let me tell you about my ungame experience with my 10-year-old granddaughter. The other children were busy with their activities, so I offered to play the game with her. Oh, the understanding and closeness that hour brought to us. I learned so much about her goals, ambitions, hopes, and yes, her fears and frustrations. A few days later, Jennifer drew me aside, threw her arms around me, and with tears in her eyes, thanked me for spending time with her. This experience demonstrated to me, as nothing else has, the value of spending one-to-one time with loved ones. Something to my regret, I didn't do enough when I was raising my children." Mm. Interesting that both of those were from grandparents.
Yeah.
But it shows the, what these two women found out, just to spend a little time. Yeah. It's amazing what it does to a child.
Doesn't sound like there's really any age limit.
Right.
What would you say? When could a child start playing it? You know, I've got a 3-year-old. Can I start him now?
Well,
he's
almost.
Not reading.
I remember playing the game with a 3-year-old who was able to talk. She was almost 4. Uh-huh. In fact, a little boy I'm thinking of too, who was 4, sat on his mother's lap, and she would read the cards to him. And mm-hmm. you know, we other moms learned so much from this little child.
Yeah.
Because the way he interpreted questions were a little different than we would have. For example, one question that the mother paraphrased for him, the little boy, was, she said, "Jeffrey, say something about peace." And he said, "It's when you break off a part of something." And we looked at each other, not able to talk, but we thought, oh, well, that isn't what we meant. But the mother said, after we were done playing the game, she said, "You know, that poor child, I say things to him like, I want some peace of mind. Give me peace and quiet.
Oh.
Give your brother a peace."
Uh-huh.
And she said, it never occurred to me that that word
was how he was translating.
Yes,
it,
and
it?
She said, "I'm going to be a little clearer with him."
Mm-hmm.
But another, the little girl who was, I think, 3 and a half or so, her mother asked her what joy was. The question said, "How would you define joy?" And so sometimes we read the question and paraphrase it. And she said, "Honey, what is joy?" And she was sitting on her mom's lap, swinging her little legs. I can still see her. And she rolled her eyes and looked up at the sky, and she said, "It's what bubbles up in your belly and comes out your smile." And we all grabbed a pencil to write it down. We thought, well, if we ever get that card, we want to get that answer. Kids are incredible what they say.
Yeah.
Do you know, I heard a little boy who shared something in a classroom. A teacher wrote a letter about this. She was playing the game with her third graders, and a little boy drew a card. "What do you think about when you can't fall asleep?" I think that was it. And he said, "Stealing."
Mm.
Well, the teacher was fascinated with this but couldn't say anything, and the other children saw nothing wrong with it, I guess, and went on with their turn. But afterwards, she called the little boy aside and said, "I'm so interested in why you said you think of stealing."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "We don't have any food. My dad's gone, and my mom doesn't have work, and we're hungry." And this teacher wrote and said, thank you for this ungame. It helped me uncover some insight into this little boy's behavior in the classroom. He was coming to school hungry, and so I don't know where that went after that, but she was grateful enough and took the time to write to us. Children are very, very honest, especially if they trust the setting. They'll test people with the ungame. They'll sometimes be nervous or afraid to answer a question at first until they really have it proven to them that people will listen and not judge.
Mm.
And then it's just wondrous what they'll tell you. We can learn so much from our children.
Isn't that true? And it sounds like you give them the place to be able to do that, you know. So it really helps families then.
It does. I know a lot of
families. And the
families.
Family unit is kind of, the big fear is the family unit's falling apart. They're not talking anymore.
Yes.
But it's interesting, they're coming back with these ideas of game nights.
I know.
So this would be the perfect time to introduce a game like this, wouldn't it?
There used to be a kind of a movement to have family councils in your family. I remember going to parenting classes.
Right.
They would say, choose a time during the week and have a family council. Well, it didn't always work because arguments would break out or put-downs, or somebody would give an idea and someone would say, that's a stupid idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was hard for parents to know how to conduct a family council when they themselves didn't know the skills. And the ungame kind of handles that because it presents some ground rules that everyone agrees to. Mm. You know, one thing I love about a game, because some people say, well, why do we need a game for this? Why don't you just ask those questions? Yeah. Well, when you open a game board, lay it on the table, it's a nonverbal message to gather around, gather close. Mm-hmm. And people just kind of gather when you lay a game board out. And that gets them in position. Now they're in a huddle. Mm-hmm. And we recommend that with the board version of Ungame that from 2 to 6 players, and so you picture sitting around a card table or something, you're kind of elbows to elbows. Mm-hmm. When people draw a question card and it touches something inside of them, they feel safe in that kind of a huddle. Families don't usually sit that way, see?
Right.
And you're usually shouting across the room, or you're sitting, somebody's flaked out on the sofa and somebody's standing up, and it's like, who makes the rule? Okay, everyone sit down. So a game just kind of handles that, and a game has people taking turns, and they don't question that. Mm-hmm. And do you know that in most families, they don't take turns?
Mm-hmm. That's
the same
true.
Kids. Oh, reminds me of another story of a little girl. 9-year-old ran up to me when I was at a convention demonstrating the Ungame to psychologists. She was with her parents, and she ran up and said, oh, I love the Ungame, I love it, I love it, I love it. And I was overwhelmed. She just was hugging my legs. And I said, oh, you've played it? And she said, yes, in my house. And she said, I have 2 sisters, 11 and 13.
Oh, my.
And she said, only with the Ungame do I get to finish a sentence. And I love that.
Yes.
Because some kids... They don't take turns.
That's right. Now, because on the board, you not only draw cards, but as I say my comment, you can't talk.
That's right. That's right.
That's right. So I get to share it, and I feel safe in doing that.
No interruptions.
No interruptions. And I can finish my thought.
And you know that just as other games go, it'll go around the circle or around the table, and you will get an equal number of turns.
Yeah.
So the gregarious child or person is toned down to one turn. Every so often, and the shy one is given a whole turn with people looking.
Now, you also have comment squares on the game, so that if I did hear something I'd never heard before from my child or my husband, I can say, when I land on that, I can actually ask a question. So I could say, oh my, could I ask a question? Is that what
I
can do?
Yes. On the game board and in the pocket version on games, there's a turn that's called question or comment. Mm-hmm. And it means that you can indeed ask a question of your design, of any player. They have the option of answering or passing or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or you can make any comment on your mind. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember a time when one of my sons came home from junior high school and said, I want to play the Ungame tonight. And strange that was the first thing when he came in the door. I had gotten my voice back by that time. And after dinner, we sat up and played the Ungame. And when he landed on a question or comment space, he said, okay, you guys, remember, you can't say anything unless it's your turn.
Mm.
He felt he had to remind us. And then he said, I got in trouble in school today. And he wanted to tell us his side of the story before the teacher called. That's why it was so urgent. And it was amazing. I sat and listened to him describe the things, all the dynamics in this situation at school. And I actually felt sorry for him. Things had happened like that to me in school. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, if we wouldn't have been playing the game, I would have started saying, well, why'd you do that? Well, why'd you do this? Well, why didn't you say this?
Uh-huh.
Well, you should know better, you know. Yeah. And he knew that with the Ungame, I would hear him out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good lesson for me.
Mm. Those are good life lessons, aren't they?
I know.
You're teaching life lessons to people.
It reminds me just the other day when someone asked me how many games had sold, and I told him what I thought the number would be, and he said, well, what is your goal now, to sell another 3 million or something? And I said, no, my goal is for people to not need it. You know, because we do learn from playing it, and if people play it enough, they won't need it.
Yeah.
Because it creates patterns of listening and respecting. And when we experience being listened to and respected, then we're more apt to do that for someone else.
Right.
It is played, the game is used in situations with teenagers who are rough and tough, and some of them are in jails.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ungame is used for them to express what they're thinking and feeling. And it's amazing how gentle they become. because, you know, they don't want to be flippant and cocky with the people around the game board, other people who may be in jail with them or in trouble, because they will worry then that someone will joke at their answer. So they start getting serious, and everybody respects each other with the game just because they don't want to be treated wrongly themselves. But it's just, it's so amazing to me how it has spread out.
So we've seen real value in families, and certainly children being able to talk with their parents, maybe, and even siblings being able to finally share some emotions and some feelings that they weren't able to do because of the other siblings. And now we're kind of moving into teens. We want to talk a little bit about teens.
Yes. And I'll mention a couple other family stories,
let's, okay,
too, because some of them involve teens. But I heard recently from a woman who said that her little boy was able to share a dream that he had while they were playing the Ungame, a dream that he probably never would have shared. But the question asked to share, someone to share a dream, and he did. And he said that he dreamed that his mother left him and daddy, and that he was alone. And he started to cry when he shared it with her in the game. And after the game, and see, this is one of the amazing things. You don't have to comment on those things. I learned that as a mother. But after the game is put aside, she said she walked over and just put her arms around him and said, you know, your mommy would never leave you. And she said it gave her a chance to affirm him and comfort him, and in a way that she would not have thought to do on a busy day. But she was thanking us that the Ungame brought that out. Another wonderful story, and this was a young 13-year-old boy, so he was sort of a teenager, but a grandmother. Again, it's amazing to me how grandma stories are coming to me now. This grandmother had a basket of Ungame questions. She had purchased all the pocket versions and the board version. And at some point, threw all the questions in an Easter basket one time when all the family was gathering. She put it on her coffee table. It worked such wonders in her family gathering that she decided to leave it there. So for 3 years, every time relatives came, she noticed that they all ran into the family room, sat around this coffee table, and said, "Who goes first?" She said it was just an automatic thing. Well, this 13-year-old grandson of hers developed a brain tumor. And as he got closer and closer to death, he wanted to be at Grandma's all the time. And she wrote to me and said, it's because he could talk about his feelings here. He would sit by that basket of questions. And she said no matter what question card he drew, it became a way for him to express another feeling. And she wrote to me before he died, and then she wrote to me after he died, and said that how priceless that was to her. And she said the boy's parents had never talked to him about death. And so at Grandma's was the only place he could talk. Well, those kind of stories just really more than make my day. There was a dramatic story, that a letter that came to the Ungame company about, I don't even know who wrote the letter now, but there were children whose parents were killed in an auto accident. I think this was a relative writing this letter to us, saying that the children had played the Ungame with the parents just like a week before they were both killed. And questions had come up that enabled those parents to verbalize things to the children. And the children actually participated in the memorial service because they knew what their mom and dad would want. And they knew that, and their mother and dad had just freshly said, "I love you and I care." So it was just amazing. We used to sit and cry at the Ungame company. I'm not there every day anymore since the company has grown so and has many, many other products. But in the early days, I would be there when we opened the mail. And another thing about families is that step families and foster families who are trying to integrate children into a situation, it is wonderful to help children get to know each other. Well, teenagers, do you know that there's a judge in Las Vegas, Nevada, that sentences families to playing the Ungame? He's a juvenile court judge, he wrote to us one time and said that that when teenagers are brought in and they're in trouble, he knows that there's communication problems at home. And so he would actually sentence this young person and the family to playing the Ungame once a week and coming back and reporting after a period of time. And he must have seen significant change because he continued to do it.
Wow, that sounds like something good that all judges should do.
I know.
In family court like that.
We even used to get prescription pages at the company. People would come in with a prescription page and say, my doctor recommended this. Psychiatrists and counselors and doctors will send people out looking for an endgame, and they will often write it on a prescription page.
Well, you know, nowadays we're knowing that mind-body connection so much.
I know.
There's so much of that. It would seem like this would be a whole new wave for the endgame.
I know.
Maybe doctors would catch on a little bit more here.
Well, I think they are. Mm-hmm. From the letters we get and the orders we get, people are catching on, thank goodness. We have a lot of high school counselors that write to us, and you know, after the Columbine shooting and the Santee, California shooting, and there have been other shootings by teenagers, I just ache. I just weep because I know that an ungame would have helped those families.
Yeah.
It would have created a time and a place and a forum for feelings to be shared and heard. After both of those shootings, the company, Tallycor, that produces the ungame, sent a truckload of games. Oh. In fact, I personally delivered them to Santee, California, to the local church or school, and just said, you know, give out these family ungames to whoever you think needs them. I felt it was the least we could do, but there are a lot of people who have not yet heard of the ungame. An example of how it opens communication with parents, a teenage girl came into a room one time, and I was actually with her mother and three other mothers playing the ungame, and this teenage girl came home from school and just burst in the door and said, Mom, what do you think of abortion? And the mother stiffened up and looked up and said, I don't ever want to hear you talk about that. And the girl stomped down the hall, and I heard the door slam of her bedroom, and I knew enough at that time about communication to know that that door closed more than the bedroom. That girl will not go to her mother again. And interesting thing is that a few weeks later, I got a letter from a woman who said, while playing the ungame with her daughter, teenage daughter, the daughter got a card about what is something you worry about. And she said, Mom, some of my friends are talking about getting abortions. And the mom said, how do you feel about that? And the girl just poured out her heart about her concerns and her worries and her thoughts, and asked her mother what she thought. And I thought how different those two scenarios were. And so teens really need help, and parents need help in knowing how to create the situation where teens can talk openly.
It's interesting. A lot of the commercials now are about, they're always telling, sit down and talk to your kids.
I know.
It's too bad they don't say, sit down and play the ungame.
I know. I wish they would.
So do you want to talk a little bit more about teens, Rhea, or would you like to, you know what I'm wondering too is if it works with teens, how about single adults?
Yes, oh, it's amazing to me how many letters we get. There are groups called Parents Without Partners. They often will play the ungame. In fact, I've led many a workshop where we've had 50 people sitting around on the floor in groups of six or eight playing the ungame. And amazing thing to me is that all the ungames are packaged the same way with the cards in the same order. And here I am in a large room with maybe 50 people on the floor in groups. They're all starting at the same place, but after about a half hour, one group is laughing hysterically, another group is leaning in and the tears are dripping, and another group is kind of looking around like maybe it hasn't quite happened for that group yet. And it's so amazing how the same questions in one's combination of people would go to such a deep level, but all it takes is one person. You know, if you're, some people will say, well, what do you do if everybody laughs and jokes? And I say, well, what I do if I'm playing and they laugh and joke is that I don't share my deeper feelings. Who wants to share them if people are joking? But if one person gets a card and it might say, share a time when you felt sad, and they're willing to risk going to a deeper place, like saying, I felt sad 2 months ago when my mother died, and she was my best friend, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And if they get in touch with feelings, you can feel the entire group going to that deeper level, and then the next questions will evoke different answers. So somebody has to risk. But I've had I had a single mom write to me one time, and she said, I have eliminated some men from my list. She was dating a man for about a year. She really liked him. She had two children at home. She didn't tell him, I guess, for the first 6 months, and then afterwards just didn't ever talk about them with him because he never asked her about them. They were playing the ungame one night, and she said she found out that he does not like children. And he said, you know, I never want children and all. And she said, I wrote him off right tonight.
You He's know. Gone, huh?
So, and I get reports of people saying that it takes the conversation below the chit-chat level. Mm-hmm. And people really get to know each other well.
Yeah, it's very important, especially when you're single. Now, how about when you're a couple?
Oh,
does that work with marrieds?
Yes, it works
and,
with couples.
Or your significant others, you know?
Do you know that I had a wonderful story of a woman who, I think she'd been married, she said, 7 years, and she was playing the endgame with her husband, and she drew a card, and it said, tell about a time when you felt rejected. Hmm. And she said, in front of all this group, she said, I feel rejected every night. Well, her husband kind of glanced at her, but couldn't speak right then. A little bit later, he landed on the space that allowed him to ask her a question, and he said, well, why would you say you feel rejected every night? And she said, well, you always turn away from me. You always face the wall when we go to sleep. Mm. He said, didn't I ever tell you about my ribs that I broke in playing football in college? He says, it hurts to lay on my left side.
Oh.
And so at some point during the night, he would always turn away from her, and she took that as a rejection. Now, who would ever think that?
See? Yeah.
That would that have ever come out? I don't know. Well, I saw them about 4 weeks later in a supermarket, and they were laughing and joking, and I said, how are you guys doing? And she said, great, we traded sides of the bed. And I would
That's
have never
creative
thought of that.
Solving.
That's
problem
right.
solving.
And I thought, well, there we go. That brings that out.
Yeah.
Many, many times we have people writing saying that they had been married for 20 years, 30 years, and something came up in the game that they didn't know about the other. Mm. One was something as simple as what a birthday meant to the wife. Mm. A husband wrote and said he didn't celebrate birthdays growing up. Their family was poor, and it was just never a big deal. He didn't realize that his wife waited for a gift every year and cried herself to sleep every year and could not even verbalize that to him. And when she drew a card about her favorite holiday or something, somehow it came out about birthdays and celebrations. Maybe it was something about a celebration. And he said he realized for the first time how important that was to her. Well, he went out that day and bought her a birthday present, and it wasn't her birthday. And, but I'm always amazed that people take the time to write these things to us.
Oh,
Willie,
you know, when people say it, it's one thing, but when they write it, you know, it's even more meaningful.
I know.
So that's very wonderful.
You know, I think the most gripping story that I have about the endgame, the place that, or the time it touched me the deepest, was three couples in their 40s. They'd known each other for 10 years. They played cards together a lot. So they were old friends. They had all been married, you know, 15 years or so. Norman drew a card maybe 45 minutes into the game, and it said, talk about a time when you felt guilty. Mm-hmm. His answer was, I always feel guilty. There again, nobody can talk if they're playing the game. So I suggest a lot of people have paper and pencil.
Yeah.
I always play with paper and pencil in front of me, and I think the rules in the game say that. Because I want to go back to that at some point and see if they'll tell a little more. Well, sure enough, a little bit later in the game, someone got permission, and they said, Norman, why have you felt guilty all your life? And he looked around at the people sitting around that table. I remember his glance, and then I think he was thinking, do I dare share this? Mm-hmm. He finally said, I've never told this to anyone, but do you know that when I was 9 years old, I had a brother 11, and my uncle took us fishing every Saturday. One Saturday, my uncle was sick and couldn't go, and we begged our mom to go alone. So Ralphie and I ran through the woods, went to the lake, and ran out on the dock, and we were fishing. And he said, my brother and I used to fight a lot. He was bigger, he was more popular, he was smarter, and he used to always tease me. And he said, we got into a fight. And while he was telling the story, he got really quiet, and we were just on the edge of our seat. And he said, I knew he couldn't swim, but I pushed him off the dock. Well, my goodness, we all gasped. And he said, oh my gosh, I couldn't swim either, and so I ran all the way back home. It was about a mile, and I yelled to my mom, Ralphie fell in the lake. Mm-hmm. By the time she went and got some neighbors, and they drove a pickup truck through the woods, he even described running behind the truck with the dirt all fluffing up in his face and choking. And we were feeling this little boy's panic. Mm-hmm. They got back to the lake, and he said he hid behind a rock while they eventually dragged the lake, and they pulled up his brother's body.
Oh my.
Now here we are sitting in a kitchen hearing this man tell this story, and we are just spellbound. You know, I was glad for the rule that said we couldn't talk, because I was so afraid that someone would say something that would cut off the communication. And he was obviously trusting us with this story. He went on to describe the funeral and Ralphie laying in a coffin in a living room and all the relatives making a fuss over Ralphie, while he, little Norman, was hiding behind the door, dying a million deaths. He said he never to this day had told anyone that he pushed his brother. Well, I wondered, what should we do? What should I do? I was sort of leading this experience. Well, he gave the dice to the person next to him. And thank goodness that person rolled and landed on a space that says you can ask a question or make a comment. Mm. Oh, no, I take it back. She landed on a space that said take a card, and it said say something about trust. And she said, Norman, thank you for trusting us with your story. And we all kind of sighed a little bit that
was
eased the pain a little.
Oh.
It was the next person who got the question and comment space, and it was a man. He pushed his chair back and stood up, and he said, Norman, this is going to be a nonverbal comment. And he walked around, and he actually got down on his knees, and Norman turned toward him, and I can still hear the thump of them grabbing each other. And they just held each other for the longest time and cried. We all cried. Well, needless to say, we did not need the game anymore after that. But the three men went out into the moonlight and talked under a tree while the gals stayed in the kitchen for a while. And I knew that some incredible thing was happening, that Norman was able to share that for the first time. And his wife told me 3 weeks later, she said, you know, he walks differently. He laughs more. He relates to our three teenage sons differently. And I thought, of course.
Yeah.
Somehow that confession, in a sense, and that forgiveness or acceptance, and whatever was spoken out in the front yard, who knows what, set him free. And I've seen the Ungame do that many, many times. Mm. It uncovers things.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Powerful story.
I have gotten a letter from pastors several times saying, or counselors saying that they hate to tell us, but the Ungame broke up a prospective marriage.
Which is probably
used,
good.
Yes, right. If it's used in premarital counseling.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's a common thing for people to find out they are not matched up. And these counselors then thank us and say, you know, it could have been years before they discovered that.
Right.
And three children later or something.
Right.
So that's wonderful.
So it's really helped couples. You can sure see from the family environment, it's making a tremendous impact. And
yes.
you were indicating a little bit about teachers when you were saying that you'd taken some of the games down to Santee and those areas.
Yes,
what other stories have you heard from
teachers? Well, it's used a lot in classrooms, like in the psychology classes or sociology classes. It's used as, I'm looking here about in a drug prevention program. Mm. Here's a letter I have from a teen that says, I have a problem with my Ungame. Friends keep borrowing it and they don't return it. When I play the Ungame is the only time I really want to talk. And precious things like that. But here's a letter from a program coordinator of a drug prevention program. And she says, or he says, I don't know if it's a man or woman, this program is designed to build resiliency skills in at-risk adolescents. An activity that is very successful in our groups is the Ungame, since it provides the opportunity, safety, and permission to discuss topics that are brought up by the cards. I have personally seen this game used to deepen the level of involvement and commitment in teen groups. He goes on to tell about other ways that it's being used, but a lot of youth groups and churches.
Mm-hmm.
The game has been out now. This is our 30th year, and I have people come up to me now and say, oh, the Ungame, I played it when I was young.
Yeah.
And they'll say, I played it in high school, and they're now with their grandchildren, you know. And it's a wonderful feeling. And I meet so many people who played it in their youth group, in church or at synagogue or wherever they gathered with young people. So it's a great all-night slumber party kind of activity.
Like it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's been used, you were kind of indicating some of the special needs areas where it's been used in hospitals.
Yes.
And I would imagine it's powerful in cancer.
It is. It is. I have a letter from the Chalk Hospital in Orange County, California, Children's Hospital, where it's used in their recreation room, and it's a favorite thing for parents and groups of cancer children or children with cancer. Mm-hmm. And there again, it enables them to talk about their condition, and there's laughter. I have taken the game into many of those places and introduced it, and I remember being nervous about going into a children's cancer ward and having kids come in with their shaved heads, and you know, they've lost their hair because of radiation or something, and some of them have enormous bandages and patches on it. And I was actually afraid that I couldn't even get into the game with them. But we were talking about their dogs at home that they loved, and they were talking about a favorite birthday. They were talking about things they wanted to do when they got well, talking about what they think about when they're going through treatments. And I was enlightened. I mean, I went home feeling so high. They blessed me. Mm-hmm. No end.
I bet.
Wow. It's also used I mentioned the youth groups, mm-hmm. and we get a lot of reports from Bible study groups in churches who use it. I even have a pastor friend who uses the question cards sometimes for sermons because he wants the Spirit to lead him.
Yeah.
So he will put a deck of cards on his lectern and just turn them over because he said he's practicing sharing himself in his sermon time. And if he just uses books and resources, he's apt to have it more intellectual.
Uh-huh.
And I lead retreats all over the country, and I often use the ungame as an icebreaker to begin a retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes we'll put them in small groups and let them go deeper. If you play it three times, like on a Friday night, a Saturday noon, and a Sunday morning, which mm-hmm. would be a usual retreat, each time they play it, they get better.
I bet.
They're not as nervous.
Uh-huh.
They're more willing to trust. They will share the deeper things. And I've seen a correlation between sharing deep feelings and healing.
Mm-hmm.
I have studied healing for years, and I know that if we suppress emotions, mm-hmm. keep them in our body, that often disease is the result.
Mm-hmm.
And still, where do we go to share?
Mm-hmm.
Unless we can create the places.
Mm-hmm.
And so I entrust the people with ungames to be creating places where people can be, in a sense, set free of some of the things they've carried for years and didn't know where to share it.
Mm. And now you were saying that a lot of religious gatherings are using it.
Yes.
This. Not only the pastors, but they'll do it within their churches,
That's right.
And youth groups. And
churches and synagogues are just kind of set up to have mm-hmm. groups. You know, there's young people's, there's children's groups, there's teen groups, there's singles groups, there's mm-hmm. couples groups, there's social groups, and then certain interest groups. And so it's just a natural that they would have an ungame. I know of quite a few churches that have 6 copies of the ungame in their church library, and so that couples can check them out, or the youth group can take them on retreat or whatever.
You know, I've heard that people say that in churches where they've said, I had that, we played that ungame years ago, mm-hmm. as if now it's done.
I know.
And I think that's such a mistake, because communication is an ongoing process in our lives, and we're always in different places, aren't we?
Yes.
In
yes.
our lives, when we're children, when we're adults, when we're grandmas, you know.
I know.
And so we're constantly changing.
Well, my husband and I have been married 43 years, and we still take a deck of ungame cards in the car if we're going to be taking a long motor trip.
Mm.
And because even though the questions are the same,
mm-hmm. you change.
The answers change. You're right.
Yeah.
We change.
Mm-hmm.
And if I think I know my husband by what he said 6 months ago about something, I'm in for a surprise.
Right.
I want to grow and change, and mm-hmm. I don't want people to lock me into a belief I had years ago.
Right.
And so I appreciate being able to give them a fresh answer to where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've discovered that other people are that changing too. And so I feel sad when someone says, oh, we got the ungame years ago and we
mm-hmm.
played it once.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
then they say it's on the
yeah.
shelf.
Right.
And I say, like you were saying, get it out again.
Yeah.
The people you played with are not the same people
exactly.
now. And,
exactly.
Be surprised. Mm-hmm. Some of the questions, it is a common thing that people ask me, you know, don't you get tired of the questions? Some of them offer such a variety of answers. For example, what are the 4 most important things in your life? That's one of my favorite ungame questions.
Mm-hmm.
You learn so much about a person. Well, there are times that someone will say money, my car, my house, and my family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next time you play it, that same person, if he or she is just coming through a bout of the flu, or they've had a cancer scare, or
right.
they've lost a parent
yeah.
Or a child, you better believe that the four most important things are going to be different this time, you know. So it changes. I often tell people, you know, you don't need new questions because it's the questions can stay the same, but there's 1,000 answers to every question.
Yes.
And that intrigues them.
That's very true.
And people can answer at a superficial level or they can go deeper. Mm-hmm. I remember playing it in a jail one time and with people that were locked up, and one of the cards said, say something about love. Mm-hmm. And this person said, it's spelled L-O-V-E. Now, that's an acceptable answer. That would be the most superficial one you could give, but it's fine. We're not asking that you go any deeper than you feel safe. The very same person, after an hour, drew a card asking him about his mother. And he got tears in his eyes because he said he didn't have a mom that was there for him and that he wondered what it would be like to have a mother that loved him. So there he's talking now about love, right, but at a deeper level. Right. But the trust has to build. So if you just play it once, you don't really... people have to sort of practice expressing themselves. So,
well, now the nice thing is, because it's nice that more Ungames are out there being sold, is that you don't take your old Ungame now. You can get all these new versions of
That's
the Ungame because
right.
there's so
right.
many new versions of
That's
it. You've right. written, you have continued to be creative and written a lot of questions now that are based towards some of these categories we've talked about.
Yes, the couples Ungame, those questions actually came from family counselors and couples who have been on Marriage Encounter and things of that sort. The teen Ungame, those questions were created by teenagers who had played the basic Ungame and who submitted questions. The same is true for the kids Ungame. Then there's a Christian version Ungame, which is used in a lot of Bible studies and a lot of... prayer and share kind of groups, because, if you want to know how to pray for somebody, play the Ungame and find out what's really going on. Mm-hmm. People don't say fine, thank you when you say how are you, you know, when you're playing the game. They'll be honest. Yeah. And so that's the Christian version. And then the family version also came from family counselors. And so we did get a lot of help. By the time the pocket versions came out, we were inundated with suggested questions. You know, in the board game, there are blank cards, and a lot of people think there's a mistake. Why are there 10 blank cards in every deck? It's so that whoever buys that game can customize it.
Oh.
So if you're going to, if you buy it for your insurance salesman's office, you can write questions about that. If you buy it for your Girl Scout troop, you can ask questions about that. So some people start out introducing the game by giving each player a blank card and saying, why don't you write a question that you would like to ask someone, and we'll stick it in the deck and see who gets it.
Hmm.
And I remember one time a little boy was mad at his mother, and he wrote the question, why are some people so mean? He stuck it in the deck. Now, nobody knew what that question was until about 20 minutes later when he drew it, and he got it himself. And he got all embarrassed, and then his mother said, well, what does it say? And he said, well, it's the one I wrote. And he read it, why are some people so mean? And we all were looking at him. Of course, it was his turn, and he put his head down, and he said, I think hurt people hurt people.
Oh, my.
And I thought, that is so profound. And I thought he discovered that himself, that maybe people are mean because they're hurt. He said, hurt people hurt people. I've never heard that before.
Oh, that's powerful.
And I, as you can tell, I get some of my answers from hearing other people's answers.
Yeah.
I think that's the same answer I would give if I would have thought of it first.
And you've had some testimonials from some very prestigious people.
We have, yes. Dr. James Dobson, who has a program called Focus on the Family, began recommending the Ungame Way in the early years, like 25 years ago. And still talks about it on his program and has interviewed me several times.
Right.
And so that is a wonderful endorsement. And I've been on the Hour of Power with Dr. Robert Schuller.
Mm-hmm.
And because of his international outreach with his ministry, orders came from all over the world in countries I had never heard of.
Mm.
And the armed forces, which is also a marvelous place. You know, people are lonely when they're in the service and they're away from their family.
Mm-hmm.
And to sit and play the Ungame and be able to share those feelings with other people make you feel closer to them. Mm-hmm. You know, so we've just had a wonderful history with the game.
Oh, well, it sounds like it. Just so many wonderful stories have come out of this. I know I've heard them for years and have have read the articles that have been done on you, as well as the Reader's Digest article that I thought was absolutely wonderful.
Do you know that people still read the Digest article, which came out probably 15 years ago or
Tell
more?
The story about the little girl, the kiss.
Oh, yes.
That was such a touching story.
It was actually a little boy, I still see him, a little skinny little boy, about 10 or 11, playing the game with his mother and father and older sister, and I happened to be visiting in their home. His mother drew a card, and it's interesting, I sometimes forget what the question was, but I remember the response. It had to do with affection, I think, and she shared that she had never been kissed by her mother. And she was telling a story. She said, we used to always have company, and my mother would kiss my cousins and kiss my aunts and uncles. And she said, when I was 5 years old, I ran up to my mother after everybody went home and said, kiss me, Mama. And her mother said, you're too big, and just walked away and didn't kiss her. Now, here's this mother sharing the story. I watched the little boy look at her, and I watched the older girl look at her while she told the story. Didn't know what they would do with that story. Well, a few turns later, the little boy lands on a question and comment space. And you know, children are very creative. They will interpret that the way they want. And he got up from his chair. He walked around behind his mother, slid his little thin arms down around her neck, and kissed her on the cheek from behind. And the tears just started flowing from her. And I thought that was such a precious moment. Mm-hmm. So I have gotten to witness some what I would call miracles, mm-hmm. things that happen that are so beyond being able to be staged, you know, in any particular way. In the Reader's Digest article, they gave 5 points. It was called The Simple Secrets of Family Communication, mm-hmm. and it told a little bit about how I lost my voice to discover how to communicate. And then the 5 points they thought were important was, first of all, to listen, really listen. And then there was a story that I'm not too proud of. It's a story of one of my sons coming home from school and storming in the door when I was a mute and saying, I hate school, I hate school, I'm never going back. Mm. Well, if I would have been able to talk at that time, I would have yelled at him for yelling, first of all.
Yeah.
I would have warned him that if he also threw his lunchbox down and the thermos bottle went across the room, and they were breakable in those days, I probably would have lectured him about that and about slamming the door. And then when he said he hated school, I would say, what a terrible thing to say. Hate is not a nice word. I would have just barked at all these words. And when he said, you know, I hate school, I'm not going back, I would have said, you are too going back as long as you live here. Well, because I couldn't talk, and I'm so grateful for my muteness now that I look back, I didn't say anything, and he stormed to his room, and he came back a little bit later, big tears in his eyes, and out came the story of a humiliating thing that happened in the class, and how embarrassed he was. And he told me this story with his head in my lap, and again, not being able to talk, I found myself feeling the pain of this little boy that was embarrassed because someone teased him. And I patted him on the back, and all of a sudden he sat up and said, can I have a cookie? And it was like so quick, it scared me. And he said, I'm going down to Jimmy's. And he grabbed a cookie and ran out the door. And I thought, how did he get fixed? He was sobbing. He was fixed. I stayed there on the sofa praying that I would figure out what I had just done to him, because had I yelled at him, we would have been yelling all the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And then his dad would have come home and I would have said, you know, wait till you hear what he did. And then we would have limited his television and he would have gone to bed heartsick and slept in the morning. And then it would have been an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. And so the point they put in this article was listen, just listen, you know, mm-hmm. don't answer. Then there's the one about don't criticize or judge. And we told the story of the teenage girl that mm-hmm. said, hey, Mom, what do you think of abortion? And we told about that. So we aren't to make a judgment when someone says something to us. We don't know what's behind it. Then the third point was to talk from the heart. And I tell a story of a little boy that I walked behind leaving a football game one time. He had been playing the game, and his dad was watching. And their team won. And I would have thought the dad would be so excited. And I walked behind them to a car. And I heard the little boy say, Dad, what'd you think of my game? Mm-hmm. And the dad said, how come you dropped the ball in the second quarter? And I wanted to tap him and say, listen to this little boy's feelings. Yeah. He was so jubilant, and I just watched the little boy, you know, he's dragging his helmet now and walking all slumped over. And I thought, oh, come on. When someone shares something from their heart, we need to answer from the heart. Mm-hmm. I discovered two languages when with the Ungame, head talk and heart talk. Mm-hmm. If people talk from their head, it's okay to answer from your head. But if they talk from the heart and you answer from your head, they will close up and not share anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I often wished that they could have replayed that. The little boy said, you know, Dad, did you see me? You know, did you see our team win? And Dad would have said, you know, you did great, son. Yeah. And a little bit later, say, do you want to go play catch or something? But I just watched that dampened his spirits. The fourth point was don't assume. And this is the story of the two, the young man with the broken ribs who always faced the wall, and the wife didn't know, interpreted it the wrong way. And the fifth point was to show your love. And here was the story of Carmen, who had never been kissed by her mom, and a little boy came over and kissed her. And so the Digest article is still floating around. I got a letter just last week from Africa from someone who had read the Digest article. Someone also in Colombia sent a letter saying that it's printed in a composite of Reader's Digest articles, apparently translated into Spanish, of some of their favorite stories. And so that's been a wonderful testimony to the game.
Oh, yeah, there's just so many wonderful. And I know that you've got so many different ways to play the game and reasons why we should play the game. We've probably talked about a lot of the reasons why.
I think so.
Haven't we,
yes.
Play the games? But do you want to just cover a few of the creative ways you can use the game? We've talked about some of those as well.
Yes, I mentioned putting them all in a basket or a bowl and letting people who come and visit take a card, knowing that no one will comment unless it's their time. I put an Ungame question under a placemat if I'm going to have a group over for dinner.
Oh, that's nice.
And I encourage organizations and groups to do that. It totally changes the conversation. All you have to do is go up to the mic after everyone is seated and just say, sometime during your lunch or dinner, would you answer the question under your placemat to the people on either side? I have a friend who scattered Ungame questions all over a card table and put a clear plastic tablecloth over it.
Oh.
And that's where her guests sat to have coffee each time they came, and they always picked a different question to answer. I suggest that people take notes while they're playing the game, and that's one of my good suggestions for those question and comment turns, so that you have something to ask at that time. Enclose an Ungame card in a letter to a friend and invite him or her to share his or her answer on that next letter. That gives people something to write about. I have friends who use the questions for journaling. They turn over a card each day and write a page on it.
Well, now you could email a person a question, couldn't
Exactly, you could.
And say, why don't you respond to this? You
that's know, right. And it's easy to answer one question if that's all you get at one time.
That's right.
And so that makes it helpful to people. In church groups, I've tried things like play the game answering the question you think Jesus would answer. And other times, I will say to a group of adults, let's play the Ungame and answer the way we would answer if we were 9 years old. It's a totally different twist.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely different. And other people have come to me with ways they've used it. I remember a couples group that said that they played it with several couples together. They didn't answer the questions for themselves. They would draw the card and try to guess what their spouse would answer. And oh my goodness, I don't know what that
was. That the way to do it?
It was okay. I mean, it was a lot of laughs, and it was good. And so sometimes people will answer also a head talk answer and a heart talk answer, just so that people get used to the different ways to do it. Some families will put an Ungame card on their kitchen countertop, and all the members will answer it sometime during the day.
Wow.
Lots of ways.
Oh, that sounds... You know, it sounds to me like one game can heal your life. But I would say even more than that, Rhea. I think one game can heal the world. I think you wanted to make an impact on the world. I think you have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope I have.
Thank you.